Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you. Chose that you should exist. Chose you. Consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed. And we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all hearts, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be, that you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of, that you deserve the existence you have been given or it would not have been granted to you, that you deserve all the love you can imagine because love is what you are made out of, that you deserve all the light you can create in your life because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light. For you are nothing else.
And welcome to Revolutionary Life. This is Gary speaking. Good evening, everyone. This is our show, 7 to 9, every weekday night, Revolutionary Life, where we look at life from a revolutionary point of view. And revolution ain't nothing but change. There's a whole lot of things that need to be changed out there. And so we're going to be talking about the things that affect our lives every day. And tonight, our subject is the police. I watched the George Floyd trial of the police officer who killed George Floyd, took his life. So I decided to do this show tonight on the police, guys. We all got them, don't we? They're everywhere. But what's really going on out there? And what does policing look like today? And what do you, as an individual, in a situation like this? And we're going to talk about this situation, not George Floyd, but in general, policing in this country in general, and and what the individual like me and you, how we deal with this. Some of us got young kids. Some of us got to travel every day to work, to stores. We got to be out there in the community. Are we safe? We're going to talk about it. And if we're not, what do we need to do to make sure that we are safe? Thank you for joining me tonight. We're talking about policing. I was telling you I was watching the George Floyd situation today, but that ain't the first trial like that, right? There's a whole list we can go down. But of people who've been killed, and lives have been taken. And so I think that's very, I think it's very important that we address this question and we address it as soon as possible. Because there's this one thing I hate for people to live in fear and doubt because they're hurting me and somebody else or themselves. Fear and doubt. If you live in fear and doubt, wow, that's damn near the definition for insanity. You a danger to yourself and others because you're scared all the time. Why should you be? You got police. I do you. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Police, the absence of police, the presence of police as well. The George Floyd case, guys, as we're watching this today in the last couple of days, we saw, thanks to people complaining about having surveillance all over the place, TV cameras up on the telephone poles and the stoplights and everybody's got a video camera in their hand because their phone can record video. And so we got a society now where eyes are everywhere. And some of those eyes are police. They have, you know, surveillance. But then we got eyes too. And when we decide, if and when we decide that the police is not doing what we think they ought to be doing, whatever that is, then what do we do? And what do we do? Now, I got a confession to make tonight about policing. When I was a kid, I wanted to either be a fireman or policeman, or something like that. Yes, they almost got me. I wanted to be, in fact, I still got young people in my family, nieces, nephews, who are related to law enforcement. However, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a policeman. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you two reasons why. One is somehow I felt a need to protect and serve. Right? Somehow I, and I'll tell you why I felt that need, guys. I'll tell you why I thought policing would serve that purpose. Because I didn't like seeing people used and abused, stole from, hurt, that kind of thing. My mom worked at night. I had to meet her at the bus stop at 11 o'clock when she got off at 11 at night to walk her home because it was not safe for her to walk home at night. but as a black man, so-called black man, an African-American in this country, a man of color in this country, whatever you want to call it, I wanted to be a police officer as a young man, or a fireman, or somebody who saved lives and helped people, or, you know, a doctor or something, for instance. Now, one of the things that influenced me, and you tell me, when I run this down, you tell me if this ain't influence. One of the things that influenced me is that ever since I was a kid, a little child watching TV, that's my pastime, I saw police stories. It started with the Westerns. I saw the Long Ranger. I saw the Wild West police stories. Sheriffs, the town sheriffs with the badges on in the Western towns. And they would go in and clean up these towns from these outlaws and gunslingers. And I saw people going to the sheriff for help. And I saw some of these famous sheriffs stepping up to stop crime and stop these bad guys. Good guys wore the white hats, the bad guys wore the black hats. Westerns, cowboy stories, but police stories, the same. The sheriff was the hero. The town sheriff was the hero. Wyatt Earp, Dark City. And then as I grew older, as a teenager, I saw young police officers, the Mod Squad, right? 80211, 334, whatever it was, that was Hollywood, there was this other setup. There was CHIPS, the motorcycle police in California. There was, you name it. There was Car 54. Some of y'all ain't old enough to remember Car 54 and stuff like that. But it was just police stories after police stories after police stories after police stories. And as I watched my TV every day, there was a Law and Order. Every day there was a Mannix. Every day there was a, come on guys, there was a Beretta. Every day there was a police story. So I was raised on police, and so were you. If you watch, if I'm mentioning something you don't know nothing about, please tell me. Because I was programmed. I watched police stories, man, all my life, and I bet you did too. I'm just saying. Anyway, this little kid grew up wanting to be a police because I didn't see police standing on somebody's, putting a knee on somebody's neck until they were dead. I didn't see police on TV shooting unarmed men and women. I didn't see four police officers beating down one guy, unarmed guy. I didn't see that on TV. Did you guys see that on TV? Were the sheriffs of the Western towns shooting unarmed people in the back? Were the sheriffs of the Western towns, was Beretta and Mannix and all these guys, all these police stories, you know, New York, NYPD, blue, NYPD blue. Come on now. Y'all can help me on this. That's police stories galore. Fed to me when I was a kid. Fed to me. And so guess what? I wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to go after the bad guys. I wanted to protect and serve. Yes, I did. I had to confess. They got me, guys. They had me. Almost got me. But they had me. Police, I looked up to law enforcement. Because as a kid, just like you, I was fed these police stories. Back to back. And they haven't stopped. They haven't stopped, baby. Turn on TV now, tonight. Everybody's watching their favorite police story. And you ain't going to see in none of your favorite police stories, people being shot in the back by police, people being beat down who are unarmed by three and four different cops at one time. You ain't going to see women being killed and men being killed by cops who are people who are unarmed. They don't show that. We don't see that. That's not in the script on TV. But that's where I was raised, watching TV and watching these police stories. And the bad guys were bad. And the good guys were good. Now, every now and then, you got a movie where there was some rogue police officers. But before that movie was over, before that 30-minute movie was show was over, they was at, they had apprehended the bad cops and got rid of them. For the most part. So that's my confession. I almost became a cop, a police officer myself. I felt like that was a great job. Saved lives. I was going to be a fireman or I was going to be a police officer while I was in elementary school and junior high school. By the time I reached high school, I had seen some raw stuff in person, some things I saw in person coming up in a poor neighborhood. I had encounters with police officers myself personally, and I was called all kinds of names. I came from a southern community at a time when there was very few, there were no women, I don't think there was any women police when I came up. Or very few. And that certainly was very few black or police officers that looked like me. My community looked like me. But those people who policed my community did not. And so I've been put in the police car and called all kinds of names. I've been there, guys, been there, done that, guys. And I think that I don't believe it's hard to believe that there's a black man anywhere. And my, well, I ain't going to say anywhere, but it's hard to believe that there's a lot of black men who had these situations with police. Whether they were committing a crime or driving down the street. Right? And so I didn't become a police officer. Actually seeing police officers at work in my community turned me off from becoming a police officer. Now, the TV programs had me going, Jack. They were out there protecting and serving, right? The police shows had me really going. And some of these cops were heroes of mine because they'd go after the bad guy no matter what. But when I saw them in real life, in my community, that's the last thing I wanted to do is put on that uniform. The last thing I wanted to do was put on that uniform. any dreams I had of being a police officer disappeared when I became a teenager. And I watched in my community the police at work. So tonight, guys, we're going to talk a little bit about police. We're going to be talking about what you do. Nothing? Something? Anything? No. There is something you can do. Now check this out. There was an organization. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to some of the things that some communities have done around policing. Hasn't been done in my community, but things that have been done. Well, first of all, guys, you have to understand that most of us who fund, and we do, who fund the police force, have no say in their training. No, we don't get a chance to talk about what they have to go through in training. We have no say in who's going to be a police officer and who isn't. You know, we got police officers that have been kicked off of one police force for poor, bad behavior, and they just moved to another town and join that police force, and that police force hires them, knowing their history. It just shuffled them around to another police force. Didn't take his job. It looked like they fired him, but they didn't take his job. He went on over to another town and became police officer. Right? There have been complaints made about police officers using derogatory language. That was one of the things that I experienced, being in the back seat of a police car as a young teenager on a Friday night. On a Saturday night or something like that, a weekend or something. And I got called all kinds of things. Now, I could have run down and reported these police officers, but I'm a teenager. I could have run down and said, this police officer called me a N-word. He told me, I'm going to knock the fuzz off your head. I ought to knock the fuzz off your head. I hadn't done anything. Anything. I hadn't broken a law. And they didn't speak to a law that I had broken. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they suspected that I was doing something wrong. But it's a sad day. I'm on my way home from a Crystal, you know, burger place. Anyway, so these guys don't get fired because they're racist or they use racist comments and stuff like that to people who said nothing to them derogatory, right? And so just to put it that way, guys, I was disillusioned. But I understood that there was good cops and bad cops. Yeah, I understood there was good cops and bad cops. I tell you why I understood that. Because one day, I was picked up along with a bunch of other young guys, neighborhood guys, friends of mine, and accused of a crime that I did not commit. And half the guys with me didn't commit. I knew them. They were with me when this fall, some of them anyway, not all of them, some of the older guys. I didn't know whether they did it or not. But they scooped it all up. They took me into an interrogation room. You know what? You know, they said that, you know, there's some good cops and there's some bad cops, right? All cops ain't bad, they say. You can't put all cops in one bucket and say they're all bad cops because they're cops. There's some good cops and there's some bad cops. Well, here's my experience. Let me tell you my experience of both good cop and bad cop. They put me in an interrogation room. A bad cop came in Good cop, bad cop. And the bad cop said, tell me then, where were you and what were you doing on this day at this time? And I went to recall my steps as best I could on that day at that time. And he says, that's a lie. You were over here. You were probably with these guys. You were with these guys over here doing this thing, right, whatever it was. I'm going to go into that. And I said, no, sir. And he says, okay. He snatched the paper out of the typewriter, snatched it out violently, put another piece of paper in the typewriter and said, okay, let's start over again. Where were you? Da-da-da-da-da. I began to recount my story. He stopped typing. He snatched the paper out of his typewriter, rah, snatched it out, threw it in the garbage, jumped up and picked up a stick, about 5 feet long stick, sitting in the corner over there. And he set that stick on top of my head, guys. Y'all wasn't there. So I could be making this up, couldn't I? He put this stick on the top of my head. He just set it there. He didn't hit me with it. He set it on my head, just bounced it on my head, just kept bouncing it lightly on my head. And he said, I'm going to ask you one more time what you were doing that day. And if you tell me that same lie again, I'm going to knock you in the head with this stick. All right, so now I'm a young dude. I'm scared. I'm worried. I'm thinking this guy's going to hit me with this big old stick. He's already bouncing it on my head lightly. It's sitting on my head, and he's just bouncing it lightly. He's hitting me with it. He's just bouncing it on my head, letting me know that, and with this angry voice, that if I lie to him one more time, according to him, I'm lying. If I lie to him one more time, he's going to crack me across the head with this stick. There was a knock at the door. Cop opened the door, and another cop came in. Let's call this cop the good cop. The good cop came in, and the good cop said, listen, we looked up your history and everything. You don't even have a police record. I said, no, sir, I don't. He said, some of these other guys, especially the older ones, some of these other guys got a record, but you don't have a police record. And matter of fact, you don't even need to be down here. We need to get you out of here as soon as possible, get you back home. So why don't you just tell me which of these guys did the crime? And we're going to get you home as soon as we can. You ain't got no business here, no way. So he kept me in there. Nice guy. Looked like you doing good in school. We checked that out. Yes, sir, I was doing good in school. So we want to get you out of here. You ain't got no business in here. Which one of them guys did it? Stop. The good cop asked me to point out which one of my acquaintances, my neighborhood acquaintances, even the older ones, which I didn't necessarily run around with the older guys, but they were there at the time when we all got picked up. And I was supposed to point them out and said, this one, this one, this one, like I knew what was going on. I didn't know who did what. I wasn't there. So it looked like I wasn't going home because I kept telling them, I don't know anything about this crime. I wasn't there. This is where I was at. And so the good cop just threw his hands up and said, boy, I try to help you. I don't know what I could tell you. I don't know what to tell you, mama. I just tell her I did everything I could to get you out of here. Now, you sure you don't want to tell me who did it? Just tell me. Give me a name. So I could have gave him a name, even though I didn't know who did what to get home. I could have gave him a name, but I didn't. I did not. And so they locked me up overnight in juvenile detention. Since I was still a teenager, a young kid. That's my first time ever being incarcerated at all, period. And I'm in juvenile detention now. And not knowing what's going to happen to me. But I'll stop there. Good cop, bad cop. They said there's some good cops, and they said there's some bad cops, and that's true. I met two of them in an interrogation room. And they both had one goal, and that was to get me to point out somebody, to send somebody down the river, up the river, wherever. All right. And so, yeah, that's some good cops. That's bad cops. I met two of them, one good, one bad. And I met them both in an interrogation room. And they both had the same plan. One was going to scare it out of me. The other one was going to pat me on the back and tell me what a good boy I was. Anyway, guys, policing has got to change in this country. In this country, not just in your town. In this country. Guys, do anybody know what the word Bobby means in England, in Europe, in the UK? A Bobby. B-O-B-B-I-E. That's what they call a police officer. Do you know that for years, police officers in Great Britain didn't carry weapons? They didn't carry guns. They had a whistle and they had a baton. When Jack the Ripper was running around, ripping up prostitutes, killing women, the police on the streets, walking the beat, had a truncheon, a club, a stick, whatever you want to call it, billy club, and a whistle to call the other cops. Why is that? Why you figure that is? Why didn't they arm these guys to the teeth? Like our police officers. Well, England is a totally different place than America. Is that right? Is that the argument? People don't commit crimes in England? Well, here's the thing. They have a police force now that does carry weapons, but not all of them. If they're about to enter into a situation where a gun, where the dispatcher has mentioned a gun is involved, or they believe a gun is involved, if they believe that someone is carrying out a crime with a weapon, they have a special team of armed police. But everyday policing in your community, you didn't walk around with a weapon. You had a stick, you had a whistle, and you walked the beat. Or you patrolled the beat today. They patrolled the beat. The other thing is, of course, when police walk beats sometimes, the other thing is that the community knew these police by name. They'd stop by the local store. They'd stop by the local guys sitting around playing cards and checkers and dominoes, and they have conversations with them. And then they speak. Everybody would speak to them. Hey, Sergeant so-and-so. Hey, Officer Brandon, how you doing today? All right, what are you guys playing? Dominoes over there? Yeah, now I'm a good domino player, blah, 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 blah. Neighborhood guy, you saw him every day. And you glad when you close your business down because he'd be walking that beat, making sure nobody was breaking in your place or anything like that. That's a part of community policing. Now let's talk about America for a minute. I lived in a community where the police did not come from my community. And in fact, they did not come to my community unless they were coming looking for somebody to arrest. But we did something about our situation. Most of the police officers lived out in the suburbs. Most of the police officers were white, were not the color of the community that they policed. And they didn't bother coming to the community when they were off duty. They didn't bother coming to that community. They didn't know what was going on in that community. All they know is they spent 8 hours, they spent a shift policing that community, and they went back to the suburbs as quick as possible. But I'm going to tell you how we address a bad situation. I'm going to give you a little music. I'm going to take a break here. I'll be right back, guys. Hang on. And we're back. And you're listening to Revolutionary Life. We're here every weekday night from 7 p.m. to 9. Tonight, we're talking about the police. We're taking a revolutionary look at what's called policing in this country. And I kind of gave you an example of some policing that goes on in other countries, but I bet there are a lot of people saying, well, that's that country. What about this country? All right, well, what about this country? I told you I was almost a police. I wanted to be a police officer when I was a kid. I told you why. Just like you, I was raised on sheriffs and police and officers and law and order and Mannix and Beretta and Mod Squad and Car 54 and Highway Patrol and you name it. NYPD Blue, you name it. There was a police story on every night of some kind. And the police was the hero. Bad guy was a bad guy. No question about it. Once I saw police in action as a teenager, and I had my encounters, I was disillusioned right away. There was no way I was going to put on that uniform. Is this what police do? Is this what policing look like? I told you my little story. I got tons of stories, man. Oh, God. You know, my mother slept in an upstairs bedroom, and she woke me up and my brothers, my young brothers, we were very young at the time. She woke us up screaming, and we ran into her room, and she said, I heard some bumping on against the wall of my bedroom. And I looked around and looked like somebody was climbing up to this window, trying to get in my window, my bedroom window. We call the police. She's frightened. She's shaking. We all scared. We woken up in the middle of the night, mom screaming. We all scared. Two white cops show up. My mom, glad they actually showed up. She was out of breath. We all standing around. Scared to go back to bed. The two police officers said, one of the police officers looked over at the other one and looked back at my mom and said, well, you sure it wasn't your boyfriend? And they both had a good laugh. We all looked at each other like, where in the hell did that come from? We needed a police officer. We needed somebody to protect us, serve us. Protect and serve, you remember? They were standing in our living room joking about this situation. Oh, well, if he comes back, give us a call. We'll be back out. Policing. Protecting and serving. Guys, that's just another story. I can go on with those things. You know what I'm talking about. And if you didn't know, now you know. I hope you knew. But having said all that, the police officer lived in the suburbs. They only came to our community to do policing. When they got done, they rushed back out as far as they could away from the city in our community. They didn't live in our community. They didn't know our community. But you're a police officer. You're hired to protect and serve this community. Wouldn't it be apropos for you to learn who these people are, what their issues are, what their needs are? None of that. When you want to know the territory, the area in which you're assigned to patrol, when you want to know what's going on in that area, the local businesses, the communities, the churches, all that stuff in the area, so you have an understanding of the community and how it works and who you can go to, and that kind of thing, wasn't any of that. These police officers didn't look like the community. than live in the community and, as a matter of fact, seem to not care less, could have cared less about what went on in that community. So this ain't your police, this ain't your Bobby, your English police officer walking down the street with a club and a whistle, saying hello to the local shop merchants and neighborhood people. It's not your police officer showing up at the church, going to church on Sunday with you guys, with your mom and dad and your family. He's sitting over there with his family in church on Sunday. No. We didn't see these guys unless they were coming in our community to police. Now, in one instance, guys, there was an organization put together in the community after several members of the community, mostly young black men, unarmed, shot and killed, running from the police. But of course, the police argued that they were afraid for their lives from these unarmed black men, and so they had to kill them. excuse me. Now, I told you guys I used to watch, I'm sorry for deferring off that, but I told you guys I used to watch these cowboy movies, these westerns with the sheriff of the town, Matt Dillon, the sheriff of the town, and the sheriff used to straighten these bad guys, these gunslingers and bad guys out, right? And so I saw police in a good light as coming up as a kid. But I saw a different kind of policing also on TV. I didn't see that in my neighborhood. We ran from the police. We ran just because the police showed up. We walk away. We didn't want to talk to them. We didn't want to have any association with them. Sometimes they would just put you in the car and drive around the block, let you back out, ask you a few questions about this person or that person. If you don't have anything to give them, they'll drop you off, put you back in the neighborhood. You don't know what's going to happen to you. You're being detained. So when the police car pulled up, you left the scene. You didn't stick around. That's the kind of relationship the police had with my community. The community did get together, guys, and put together an organization that monitored police actions in our community. Physically, they had to follow the police officers. When they had a police scanner, and they had to follow the police officers when they answered a call in our community, and then watch them carry out their duties and address them. This particular community group that monitored police activities in the community carried law books with them. And so they would stand as the police were carrying out their duties, and if they saw something untoward, they would say, that's illegal. According to the law, section ... You know, the police officer will say, what are y'all standing around here for, to the monitors? And they would pull out their law book and say, look, it says right here that citizens can observe a police officer in the process of his duties as long as they stand back and don't interfere and stand back a certain number of feet or something away from where the scene is going down. So we were there legally. So we could see what was going down, because when we couldn't see what was going down, people were coming up dead, resisting arrest, whatever. In the advent of TV cameras, I mean, not TV cameras, in the advent of phone cameras, guys, like we got now, everybody can be on the police patrol. Now, rather than allow police to run roughshod over our community, when we could not trust the police, when we did not believe they were there to protect and serve us, because history after history, actions after actions told us that if you call the police to help you, you might end up being a victim, guys. That's another story I have to tell you. But you call the police because something was going on that you thought the police needed to be there to address. And before they came and gone, all of a sudden you in the car. Or somebody else getting arrested or beat up. And then it's not even what you called them about to straighten out. So you hesitated to even call them. So what good is a policeman if the community is afraid to even call them for fear that they might get shot by mistake or whatever in the process? That's where policing stands in this country right now. The police is a separate. The police are objectively separate from the community. The community doesn't see the police as something that belongs to them, even though the police department is a public service paid for by the public. The same people who pay for these police officers to exist and to carry the weapons and the equipment that they carry, the bulletproof vests, the guns, and all that stuff that they have, the people who pay for that won't even afraid to call the police. Why would you set up a police force and be afraid to call it unless that police force has made itself so alienated from the community that the community doesn't see them as one of them? Now, another aspect of community policing is recruiting police out of the community. You know, that's why I did that little confession earlier about I was going to be a police officer. I was either going to be a fireman or a police officer. That was my goal as a young boy coming up. I told you the influence that TV had on that. But I was going to police my community, protect the elderly and the kids and all that. I would have come from out of my community to protect my community. I knew my community. I knew where the guys hung out at. I knew what they were doing and wasn't doing. I know the ones that was taking care of their business. I know the ones that was on the edge between the good guys and the bad guys, but they could be just a little push and they could have gone on and took care of their business and not got into stuff. And I know the guys that had been in and out of jail several times. They couldn't care less. They were ready to go back. So they would have committed another crime in a minute, but they needed a sandwich. They needed somebody to feed to the police, so they'd get one of these younger dudes who was all enamored about how these ex-cons carry themselves. And I knew all of that. I knew all of them. If I had been a police officer, I would have understood the dynamics going on in my community, man. I would have known where to be and when to be there to protect the people who needed to be protected. My mama got off work at 11 o'clock at night. I had to go to the bus stop and pick her up. She didn't depend on any police officer making sure she walked home safely, any police making sure she got home safely. They didn't come to our community unless they were about to arrest somebody or harass somebody. They weren't from our community. They didn't live in our community. When you're faced with a police force hired to protect and serve. And you pay for them, but you're scared to call them. You'd rather not. Then that police force has completely alienated itself from the people it is supposed to protect. I'm no robber. I'm no murderer. I'm no criminal. I'm a teenager coming from a burger place on a weekend night after being out kicking it with on the weekend. I'm going home. I stop and get me a couple of cheap burgers, and I'm headed to the crib. And I got to be called the N-word. I got to be told I'm going to get the fuzz knocked off my head. And I told you I'm quoting. And I hadn't done anything. Police. And let me tell you, I told you before, I have nieces, nephews who are close to law enforcement in some ways. And and guys, I talk to them sometimes. I get around talking to my nephew sometimes. And he really talked, you know, he told me some police officers are just bullies. You know what he told me? He said, Gary, he said, you remember when you were in high school? I said, yeah. He said, you remember that kid in high school that couldn't fight and everybody would take his lunch money or beat him up or whatever, mess with him, bullying kind of thing. And I remember there was always some kid that people picked on and he couldn't fight too well or whatever. And he was more interested in his studies and going through school than out there hanging with the crowd at school, right? And he'd get bullied for that. He'd be taking books home from school. And we didn't want to be seen taking a bunch of books home from school. Ain't that crazy? But he was targeted. So I've been to schools where there was always this one guy. He said, well, that guy became a police officer. And he got a chip on his shoulder. And every day he's looking for the bully from high school. They tell me George Floyd knew the police officer who stood on his neck until he was dead. So that's not all police officers, I'm sure. Like I said, that's some good cops and some bad cops. I met each one. I met both kinds in an interrogation room. Good cop, bad cop. Yeah. Anyway, we had to address this situation. You have to address this situation. And how do you address this situation? You go downtown, talk to the mayor. You talk to the police chief. We've been trying that for years. Police officer across the street from a place I work chased a guy down. He ran into a house, and they shot him as he ran into a house. And they kicked the house door open to the house, and they start shooting inside of the house. The people in the house reported that they saw the guy come in. They heard the guy come in their house. But when they walked in the living room, the guy was laying on the floor bleeding. And the police were still shooting. And so they was afraid to go help him. They could have helped him, but nobody was going to go into that living room while bullets were flying in there. The police didn't care who was in that house. All they know is the guy they were after was in there, and they start shooting into the house. And the family who lived there was cowering as they said they could see the guy in the living room laying there bleeding. Guys, the police officer got off. You know, you're lucky he would have been reprimanded or something. You know what I mean? They say he turned his camera off. Both his car camera, there's a camera in the vehicle, and there's a camera he wears. Both were turned off. Why? I don't know. Why do you do that? Why do you have a camera if you're going to turn it off? And so, when a community can't trust the police, when the police is alienated from the community, we are a separate little club, a little force, a little gang. We wear the same uniforms and we look after each other. And the community is over here. And neither one of them trust each other. What kind of policing is that? That's not the police officer I was thinking of being when I was a kid. You know, I wanted to be a cop, but I didn't think that I would be alienated. I wouldn't think the community would run from me. I didn't think the community would hate seeing me show up. But that's the status today in many communities. Uh-oh, there's the police. You haven't done anything, but uh-oh, somebody goes, uh-oh, there come the police. If you haven't done anything, you shouldn't have anything to worry about, right? That's somebody who hasn't encountered the police the way I have. They say that. If you're innocent, why do you have anything to worry about? Anyway, guys, we had to do something about it, so we monitored the police. You got cameras now. You got cameras on the street. You got camera in your hand. Now, I'm not going to ask you to do what we did. I'm not going to ask you to do what that community had to do. And I don't mean monitor the police. Because the situation I'm referring to where the community actually monitored the police, they had a police scanner, so when the police answered a call in our community, the monitor showed up. They had law books. They stayed legal distance from the police in the practice of his duty, and they called the police on violations of the law if they saw them going down. If the police officer told somebody to get in the car, they were there to inform that individual that you do not have to get in that car unless you're under arrest. So you need to ask if you're under arrest. Am I under arrest? No. And I'm not getting in the car. Anyway, so the law was being read out loud in some situations where we thought it was necessary. Now, the other half of that, guys, and I don't want to leave this out because somebody might call me on it, is that that community monitoring team was armed. It was armed. You don't have to do that, by the way. But some communities had to take their safety into their own hands. And when the police department, the people who are paid to protect you and to serve you, are not doing their jobs, hell, what are you supposed to do? You have to protect yourself from them. How about that? And so, where I'm from, the state I'm in, they just passed a law allowing for open carry, a permitless carry. Permitless, no gun permit. I wouldn't argue with that if I thought we had a police force adequate enough to protect us, that we have to carry weapons to protect ourselves. But in a situation where the police not only does not protect you, you're afraid of them, then it makes sense that you want to arm yourself. It makes sense to protect yourself and your family, you'd buy a weapon. It makes sense that you take your protection into your own hands. So I don't care if they got a permitless gun weapon. All it is a reflection of the lack, the failure of law enforcement in your community to protect that community. That's all that means. And when they don't, you protect yourself. And so this whole thing about gun control, this whole thing about guns and people owning weapons and permits and all that kind of stuff, I get that. But let me tell you something. How do you stop that when people can't trust the folks they pay to protect them, to protect them? They have to protect themselves. Come on now. Or be a victim. Or live like a victim. Or live in fear. Of the, not of the criminal, not just of the criminal, even. And so, yeah, I got that. Gun control. Well, you control crime. You take care of our communities and our people that are vulnerable in our communities. You watch over our communities, and we won't have to have guns to protect ourselves. But, oh, no, if you ain't going to protect me, ain't nowhere in the hell you're going to keep me from protecting myself. So if I can't call the police because somebody's breaking in my house, I'm going to call Smith and Wesson. I'm just saying. The gun control is all right. I mean, I get that. I don't like guns in public at all. I don't mind anybody having any kind of gun they want. They can have an automatic weapon, a machine gun, tank, if they wanted to. I wouldn't stop them from buying any gun they want. But I don't like guns in public because children and people are walking around in public thinking they're safe. And somebody shoots at somebody else, and all of a sudden a stray bullet hits some kid somewhere. And guys, let me just tell you something about gun control real quick. When I was watching those sheriffs in those western towns, Marshall Dillon and Wyatt Earp and the Earp brothers and all these police, all these sheriffs, these famous sheriffs back in Dodge City and all them in them days, back in them days, when they came in to clean up a town, one of the first things they did, and you can go back and watch these old cowboy movies if you want, but that's when everybody carried a gun back then. That was a period of time when everybody carried a gun. What did these, what did Wyatt Earp, what did these historical famous sheriffs do? And these real people. I mean, they were on TV, but these were, the Earps were real. What did these, and when they cleaned up a town, what did they do? One of the first things they did was put a sign at the entrance to that town. And you know what that sign said? No guns in town. The gun control issue was solved 100 years ago. In the Wild Wild West, when a sheriff went in to clean up a town, one of the first things he did was put a sign up that said no guns in town. If you came in town, you registered that gun at the police department if you were carrying one. And it was open carry in the cowboy days. You just had a scabbard, a holster, and you had a gun on it, right? And the police enforced that. You don't come into this town in this public where people are going back and forth across the street to the stores and all that, and they come to town to shop and all that, and they stand a chance of getting killed because you're shooting at somebody else. You can have any kind of gun you want. But they solved the public protection problem by saying no guns in town. If you show up in town armed, you're going to have your weapon taken from you one way or another. That's how the old days, how they cleaned up a city, a town. They put a sign outside and they enforced that law. Now I'm all for everybody having any weapon they want to protect themselves and their family. But you bring that gun out in public where my mom and my kids are shopping and playing and you walking around carrying a weapon that could fall out your pocket and go off or any number of things. No guns in town. keep your weapons out of town, keep your weapons at home. You can have whatever kind of weapon you want. But if you bring those into town, they get taken from you. This question was dealt with 100 years ago. You don't have to take people's weapons. You don't give a damn whether they have a permit. You just make sure them guns don't show up in public where innocent people are. And only law enforcement carried weapons in the wild, wild west. So y'all want to talk gun control? Talk about that. Talk about how it was done back in the day when everybody carried a weapon, when it was normal to carry a weapon open. No question. Wild, wild west. They cleared that problem up with a sign that they enforced. No guns in town. Gun control ain't no big issue. It's simple. Solved a long time ago. But back to policing, guys. I had to put guns in there because policing, killing people. Let's go back to the Wild Wild West. In the Wild Wild West, if you shot a man in the back, you were considered yellow. If you shot a man in the back, you were considered a coward. If you shot an unarmed man, now we got police officers that are trained. We got police officers with a belt on them that has several tools on that belt. Everything from pepper spray to taser guns to clubs and all kinds of stuff on that belt. For you to face an unarmed man with a gun, for you to shoot down an unarmed man with a gun and you that you're trained to use and not resort to any of the other weapons you have. And not only that, these guys are trained in hand-to-hand combat. I'm watching George Floyd trial, and they had a martial arts guy talking about how he trains police and how to take down prisoners and take people down by hand, not with guns. So you got training with your hands. You got all these weapons on your belt, all these different tools on your belt for bringing down a suspect. And the first thing you go for is deadly force. Well, unarmed man, where I came from, that was a coward. I'll be back. Back, you listen to Revolutionary Life. We're here every night from 7 to 9. We take a revolutionary look at all of the issues that affect us from day to day. One of the ones we're dealing with today is policing, and we're looking at change. Revolution is number change. So we're looking at it from a revolutionary eye. Something that needs to be changed has to be addressed. And how is that change supposed to take place? Well, first of all, we've established that in a community or in a situation where the people you pay to protect you don't protect you, then you got to protect yourself. And I've told you about certain communities that set up monitoring the police. They had a scanner. So when the police answered a call in the community, the monitors would show up. And they'd have a law book. And they'd watch the police in the process of their duty. And the law says you can do that as long as you stand back and don't interfere. And, of course, I did say they were armed. And you don't have to do that. Everybody's got a cell phone now. You can monitor the police in your community. But in addition to that, how do you protect yourself when the people you pay to protect you won't? You arm yourself. So I had to get into gun laws only because I can't imagine telling people not to buy a weapon, not to be armed in a situation where the people you pay to be armed and to protect and serve your community ain't there to do that. For whatever reason, they're not doing that. And they're so alienated, you're scared to call them. You're scared if you call them, some other little kid who didn't do nothing might get shot by mistake. But I guess I deviated a little bit, but I was just pointing out to you because I was talking about these Wild West shows, and back in the Wild West, a yellow-bellied coward shot a man in the back. Wild West, a coward gunned down an unarmed man. Are we hiring cowards for police? I don't know. That was a wild, wild west. Maybe things done changed. Maybe it's okay to shoot people in the back. Maybe it's okay to shoot unarmed people to death. Maybe that's okay today. I'm just saying, back in the day, you would have been called a coward, a yellow-bellied coward, to shoot a man in the back and to shoot someone who's unarmed. Y'all don't hear me. Are we hiring freaking cowards as police? No, and I mean that, guys. I mean, I listened to George Floyd yesterday, and I heard this guy who teach martial art talking about how he teach police officers how to use their hands, martial arts, mixed martial arts guy. He teach police officers how to take down a suspect with their bare hands. The police academy teach you how to use a truncheon, a club, a billy club. And you can use that billy club, and it's got a little handle on it. And if you learn how to use that billy club well, you can triple cup, you can do all kinds of things with that billy club to bring a suspect to the ground, to subdue a suspect. In the academy, they are told how to use a taser. In the academy, and on their belt, they're carrying pepper spray. And they don't tell them what else on their belt. So when you confront an unarmed man, and the first thing you do is pull out your pistol, I don't know. What kind of training did you get? You forgot all your training? You forgot how to use a truncheon. You forgot how to use the taser. You forgot how to use the pepper spray. You forgot how to take him down by hand. You've trained in art and martial arts, and you. But you got to kill this unarmed man. You got to shoot this unarmed man. You got to pull a gun on this unarmed man. I don't get it, guys. I watched cowboy movies when I was a kid, and these people were called cowards. I got every weapon I need on my belt to take down a suspect, plus training and martial arts training. But the first time I'm confronted with an unarmed man, I'm going to pull a pistol and shoot him. I'm going to go straight to deadly force. Some guy who stole a pack of cigarettes, was selling loose cigarettes or stole a pack of cigarettes somewhere or something. I'm going to shoot him in the back because I'm tired of running after him because he's running from me. That's the police force in America. And I don't say it's all police guys. But there is no such thing in a force, in an organization, and the police are organized. There is no such thing in an organization as an innocent bystander internally. If a good cop is standing by, and I watched this at the George Floyd, when they played the George Floyd things back, if a good cop is standing by while a bad cop is committing a crime, then both of them are guilty. You're a cop, he's a cop, there are no innocent bystanders in that situation among you guys. When you see a bad, how they used to say good, bad guys get away with stuff when good guys do nothing? I watched the George Floyd tape. I watched four different cops stand around while this guy put his hands in his pocket. This guy was not, George Floyd, the body laying on the ground with this, when the police officer with his foot on his neck, this police officer was in no danger. And I can prove it to you. He put his hands in his pocket. How much danger, how much struggling is going on with George Floyd, with this dangerous black man, that he's so dangerous that you got your hands in your pocket. You didn't fear this man. This man wasn't a problem. This man wasn't resisting anything. Because if it was, you would have been wrestling with him. You weren't wrestling with him. You had your hands in your pocket. You know it was a done deal. When you put your hands in your pocket at work, the boss might come out and say, hey, you standing around with your hands in your pocket. Get to work. Your hands are in your pocket. You weren't afraid for your life. The man couldn't have been struggling. You had your hands in your pocket, taking your time. So, to look after yourself in a situation like this, you have not just to be worried, about the criminal now. You could be killed in a traffic stop. A woman could be killed in a traffic stop. Linda Blaine. We saw a woman killed in a traffic stop by a police officer. Now, these guys ain't killing rapers and robbers and murderers and all that kind of stuff. They're killing folks who's selling loose cigarettes. Or stole something out of a store, got caught, or police called because they passed a fake $20 bill. None of those things, even if they were guilty, even if these guys who were killed by these police officers were guilty as hell, none of the crimes that they were committing at the time they were killed, even if they were convicted in a court of law, would have carried a death sentence. Even if they were guilty of the crime and went to court, they wouldn't have been sentenced to death for selling loose cigarettes. So where did the police officer get off being judge and jury on the street? When did you decide that this guy needs to die because he's running from you? Or he confronted you? None of those things carried a death sentence, even if they were guilty of them. somebody decides to play judge and jury on the street. I'm just saying, guys, we got a situation here where the people we pay to protect and serve scare us to death. We're scared to call them sometimes. Even if we need the help. When that happens, when a police force, when the people you pay, you quit paying them. When they said defund the police, hell, what are we paying you for? I ain't saying defund them, but goddamn, what are we paying you for? If we can't trust you, if we can't feel safe when you come to the community, we say, hey, that's the police. Everybody, don't worry about it. Everything's going to be safe. The kids can play out in the yard. You know, when I was a kid, girls used to play jump rope and hopscotch on the sidewalk. When your people, when you're that alienated from your police department, I can see why people don't want to fund them. Why am I paying for somebody who might kill my kid tomorrow in a traffic stop? Because he was afraid for his life from a 16-year-old. Or a 12-year-old, like the little kid playing in the park. 2 seconds after police stopped, he was dead. I mean, the names go on and on, guys, but you have to protect yourself. You're in a situation where you must consider protecting yourself and your family, and it might be from the police. I'm sorry. Sorry to say that. That might not turn out too well, guys, but with all these cameras out here, we should. I'm going to encourage everybody. We should monitor the police actions going on in our neighborhood because they carry cameras. We paid for those cameras that they carry, and they cut them off in my neighborhood when they shot into this family's home because the suspect ran in, shot. And you had the family peeping around the corner into their own living room watching a man die on the floor saying we were scared to go out and help him because bullets were still flying into the house. Protect yourself, protect your family, because if you depend, you can't depend. Obviously, you can't depend on these officers to do the right thing, because the good ones stand by while the bad ones stand on your neck until you're dead, and nobody said, get up, brother. None of the officers walked over and said, I think you can get up now. Let's put him in the car. He's handcuffed. It looks like he's passed out. Let's put him in the car. He's not breathing. His eyes are closed. Let's put him in the car. But the paramedic shows up. I saw that. I saw the paramedic show up and take his pulse. The police officer never took his knee off his neck, even while the paramedics were checking the man's pulse. If he was, the paramedics were there to save his life, to take him to a hospital. And while the paramedics was examining the man, the officer continued to press his knee on the man's neck. I mean, he didn't turn the guy over to the paramedics, see what y'all can do for him. He wasn't moving. While the paramedics were doing their thing, he stood on this man's neck. This limp, dead man by this time, neck. I thank y'all for listening in tonight. My message is that you got to protect yourself and your family. When they start talking about permits and gun control and all that kind of stuff, I understand you don't want everybody running around with a gun. That's just too dangerous and all that. But when you're in a situation where the people who have guns, the police officers, the people you pay to protect you don't, you better put, it only makes sense that more and more people are buying guns. it only makes sense that more and more people want to be able to arm themselves. And just like in the Wild Wild West, when a town is lawless, you arm yourself. And in some of our communities, it's lawless. The police don't show up unless somebody calls them. And if they call them, you don't know what's going to happen. When they do show up, arm yourself. Protect your family. Protect yourself. Because if you're depending on the police force to do it, I think you've had enough experience over the last year. Just in the last couple of years alone. We can go all the way back to Trayvon Martin, guys. But that wasn't the police. But still, unarmed people being shot. When you shot, I ain't going to go back over that again. But where I come from, if you shoot somebody that has no weapon, where I come from, if you shoot a man in the back, you're a coward. You're a yellow-bellied coward. When I grew up as a kid, if we had a dispute, we said we come from here, and we'd raise our fists when we said we come from here. And that's how we're going to fight. And the best man win. We went head up, and the best man won. That's the way we did it. But you got a man with a gun, a taser, pepper spray, a billy club. Pulls his gun as his first line of defense. And you tell me about how brave and courageous these officers are. I know there's some good officers out there, guys. But let me tell you something. Like I said, like they used to say, bad guys get away with shit when good guys do nothing. I watched George Floyd trial, and I watched the video, and I saw cops standing around where Floyd was being killed. That's my rant, guys. Protect yourself. Monitor police on one hand. Protect your family, yourself, on the other hand. I'm going to open my lines for these last 3 minutes, guys. Anybody have something to say on this matter? There's a call-in number. That number is 319-527-6060. And I'm going to open up my chat room. So anybody who has a comment, and maybe they don't want to come on the air, but they could easily put something in the chat. And just FYI, when you call in, everybody's going to hear what you have to say, and everybody's going to hear my response because you're going directly onto the air. It's your time to shine. This is the call-in section. Protect yourself and your family. folks, we hire police officers so we don't have to carry weapons. So we don't have to worry about shooting somebody who's threatening us or our family or our business. But when they don't show up, when they don't perform, you got to take care of yourself. Revolutionary Life. This is Gary. Tonight we had our conversation about the police. You heard my rant about the police. But serve and protect. Or maybe they just law enforcement. I guess they got two jobs, law enforcement and serve and protect. And I think they're doing more of the one than the other. In my community. Now, if you live out in the suburbs where the police live, I bet you're in a safe community. So I brought up this thing about community policing, about recruiting police from the very communities that they're going to police. It seems to work for the suburbs. Police live out there, and they protect their neighborhoods. Everybody probably got the safest neighborhoods around. Well, what if they lived here in our community? Maybe our community would be safe also. I'm just saying. Community policing is not bringing strangers and ex-veterans join the police force who have never been to our neighborhood. Wouldn't spend 5 minutes there if they didn't have to police. Monitor the police. We pay for them to have cameras, but you know they cut them off. They cut them off. They cut them off. Monitor them and protect yourself and your family.
Did you hear Yeah, yeah.
No, he gave him up.
I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. tonight we dealt with the question of the police. I was going to do a different kind of thing tonight, but after watching George Floyd's trial and remembering all the other deaths and police killings, as I recall them over the years, over the last year or so, it's getting ridiculous. It's getting ridiculous. Crimes that don't have a death penalty associated with them shouldn't end in death to the person, even if he committed them. If a judge would not have committed him to death, where do you get off as a police officer deciding it's okay to shoot this man down? Oh, no. Man down. If a judge wouldn't have sentenced him to death for selling loose cigarettes, where do you get off at killing him? Are you playing judge and jury in the street, officer? Now, I know there's some good officers. I told you a story in the interrogation room. I met both of them, the good one and the bad one, and they both wanted the same thing from me. And they played me, or tried to. Good cop, bad cop. Yeah, that's some good cops. But when good cops stand around while bad cops break the law, take people's lives unnecessarily, and they don't stand up, they're just as guilty as the cops who did it. Cops in George Floyd's situation who held people back as people on the street were screaming, the man, eyes are closed. He's slobbering at the mouth. He's gone limp. He's handcuffed. Get up off of him. And the police officers standing around holding the crowd back, hearing them yelling and pleading. And four police officers on the scene, trained officers, trained in martial arts, trained in the use of weapons, trained in the use of all those things on their belt. Every one of those officers, anybody who didn't reach over at this guy, what his name? Mr. Chavin or something. Anybody who didn't tell that cop to get it, any cop, any police officer that was there on that scene right there watching this go down that didn't walk over and say, okay, we got him. Let's put him in the car. You can get up now to this other police officer. Nobody did that. He was on this man's neck when the paramedics arrived. He was on this man's neck while the paramedics was sticking his hand around his knee, trying to check the man's pulse at his neck. While the paramedics are checking the man's pulse, this officer still had his knee on George Floyd's neck. Why didn't he turn him over to the paramedics? The man was limp. You know what I'm saying? So when you see that, guys, when we see that, you got to ask yourself, do people we pay to protect and serve do this? And the good cops stand around and watch. They all go out and have beer tonight. The local bar. While this man's family grieves. When it gets like that, guys, you can't depend on these folks. That's all I'm saying. We've gotten to the point in my community where people scared to call them. The wrong person might die. We had a guy who was manic depressant. And obviously he hadn't taken his medicine because he thought the whole world was after him. Everybody was a demon or something coming after him. We were scared to call the police, even though people were fearful of him, saying everybody was demons and everybody's after him and all that stuff. And people were fearful, but we were scared to call the police because the police would have drove up and shot that man, killed that man. We was afraid the police would have not understood that he's a normal person when he takes his medication. He just hasn't taken his medication. And his family wants him to be safe, but they don't want him to hurt anybody. So they call the police, and the police show up and blow him away. Judge and jury on the street. If a judge would not have sentenced that man to death, where do you get off? I want to thank you guys for listening in to me tonight, right on this situation. I want you to protect yourself, and I want you to protect your family, because the day you depend on somebody else to do it, you've left your life in some unsteady hands, it looks like. You and your family's life. So anybody surprised about folks running out buying guns? Gun sales going up? I'm not. Not a bit. This is Revolutionary Life. We're on every weekday night. Every weekday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. If you miss this show, you can always catch it on demand. An hour from now, I guess about an hour from now or so, it will be recorded and put on a list of older past shows. And so you can listen to this one again or for the first time if you missed it. And you can listen to several of the past shows as well. They're all on different subjects. They're not all on the police, guys. But they are revolutionary. They're all about change. They're all about how do we make this change. And so everything in our life that affects our life, we address, we look at it from a revolutionary point of view. And there's a lot of shit. A lot of things need changing. And that's one of them. I wish we had a police force where I didn't have to worry about carrying a weapon. Because I got a police right around the corner who got an eye on things that I can trust. But when I don't, I'm going to lock and load, baby. And I hope you do the same. Thank you for listening in, Gary, Revolutionary Life. And just FYI, guys, next week I'm going to be, most people who listen to my show know at the end of the show I do a little short thing about the fact that I teach. And I'm going to probably be giving out the phone number, Skype number, because I could do this. I have to do this online with Corona. And so as long as I'm teaching online, maybe I'll give out that number. And anybody who's interested, I teach a class called Spanish for the English Speaker. So if you're interested in hablar a little Spanish, I'm going to give you that number and you can join our class. I also teach an IT class. It's a basic IT class, mostly around PCs, cell phones, and smart TVs, things like that. There's all this new technology. And I teach you how to get the best out of it. I can even teach you how to make that computer pay you. You paid enough for it. Anyway, so I'll probably be doing that next week. But that's what I do. I teach on the weekend, so I don't have class. I don't have shows then. So it's Monday through Friday. And I thank you for listening. And I'm going to catch you at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And if you go to my website, to my Facebook page with the same name, Revolutionary Life, you'll be able to catch the subject matter for each show before the show airs. Thank you for listening, everyone. And you have a wonderful evening. And I'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care. Thank you.
balls on. That's the one. Yeah. Alles, was ich kann.
Das ist Ding, da ist der, die Box kommen, das ist Ding.